Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. Greetings from Banff in Alberta in Canada. Beautiful place. As I mentioned last week on the podcast, I was gigging in Calgary at the Laugh Shop in Calgary. Thanks to them for having me. Way more Irish in Calgary than I was expecting. So probably should have booked my own venue, but that is not to take away from the Laugh Shop. Great place. Great times had. And an extra sneaky skiing day on Saturday. Now I'm here for a week in Banff because I booked this ages ago because I was already all the way over here. So I'm skiing this week and I'm not boasting. I'm just letting you know. But I was determined to keep the podcast on the regular. I had mentioned during the week that last week that I was going to put up like a bonus podcast on Monday. But then I realized, you know, I'd recorded a story about meeting a Mennonite on the plane. And then I realized, geez, if I do that, then I'm really under pressure to get something going because I really want Thursday to be the day. You know, I really want Thursday to be our podcast day. I feel like a lot of podcasts go up on Monday, so I want Thursday to be our regular day. And so anyway, I decided to hold off on the Mennonite story till now, and I want to add another story because obviously this week in Ireland, for those that don't know, in the rest of the world, Ireland has decided to hold a referendum on the Eighth Amendment. For those that are not from Ireland, the Eighth Amendment protects the right to life of the unborn. So you cannot have an abortion in Ireland under any circumstances, really, unless there's a threat to the life of the mother, which can be hard to make clear, as we learned from the Savita Halappanavar story tragedy. So I thought I would just talk a little bit about that. I think everyone's opinion on the Eighth Amendment, it's like, yeah, I have my opinion. You know, I'm totally pro-choice. I was raised by a very Catholic mother, but she was always pro-choice. She didn't like the idea of abortion, but she thought that women should have the right to have it. She thought that women should have the right to choose whether they have a child or not. And that's the way I was raised. And I think a lot of people's beliefs on abortion are about from the way they were raised. Not always, but a lot of the time. And it's very divisive, and I get that. And if you have a completely different opinion to me, I respect that. However, what I don't respect is something as divisive as people's beliefs on abortion. I don't like the law being in favor of just one morality. Some things are clear, you know, some morality is clear. But when it comes to abortion, people are not clear. And some people are okay with it and some people aren't. So I just feel like personally, if you are against abortion, then you should, you know, not have one, but perhaps, you know, you can express your opinion if you're in a situation where you're involved in somebody wanting to have one and you don't want them to have one. But I also think that somebody should have the right, especially when they can just go to England anyway. So we export the problem. I also think it's unbelievably inhumane. If a woman has been raped, that you think she shouldn't have the right to decide whether, you know, like that she shouldn't have the right to have an abortion. I just, to the day that I die, I will not be able to fathom the coldness of that. And obviously in the case of fetal abnormalities, again, pretty heartless, I feel. But, you know, I understand as well that some people have completely opposite opinions and be getting annoyed that I'm saying this. But there's nothing I can do. It's my opinion. You know, your opinion annoys me. But at the same time, I'm not going to, like, I'm not going to get uptight. I'm not going to get super upset. I don't even bother reading like discussions on various different papers, the comment section, because clearly people are so set in their ways on this. I really just feel that, you know, if people think abortion is okay, they should have the right to get it. And if people don't think it's okay, they should just not get it, you know, but that's me. That's my personal opinion. Which brings me to my story about the more militant members of the anti-choice community. Now, when I say youth defense, I can't speak with 100% confidence that my encounter with youth defense was definitely youth defense. Okay? But I will in the story I will explain why I'm pretty sure it was youth defense. But anyway, let me start at the beginning. Abortion is such a divisive thing in Ireland. You know, I've always found it difficult to talk about it. And I've very rarely made jokes about it. And when I say make jokes about it, I don't mean make light of it. I mean try to say something funny about an important issue. So I think it was at an Amnesty International charity gig many years ago. I can't remember exactly when, but it was in Vicar Street. And it might not have been Amnesty International, but it was definitely a charity gig. And at the time, I had one joke about, it was basically about what I'd already mentioned, that I do not understand the inhumanity of thinking it's okay to force a woman who's been raped to go through with the pregnancy of her rapist child. So, I mean, the joke's not that important, but it was something along the lines of, I can't understand that the Catholic Church would hold that position. I know they've been a huge fan of rape in the past, but I still don't understand it. It was something like that. Doesn't matter whether you think it's a good joke or not. It was just, I was trying to get my feeling out there on the topic, and I strongly believe that. So anyway, I did it, and it wasn't controversial at the time. I didn't think anything of it. I can't remember how many years later it was, and I certainly didn't know that I had been on sort of youth defense's hit list. But at the Oireachtas na Gaeilge go Mhíle sa Chacht 2008 in Corky, this is an assumption of mine, but I think that there are elements of the very, I'm not going to say youth defense, but I'm going to say there are elements of the anti-choice community, or perhaps like very conservative Catholics, or these are all assumptions, but I think they also may have some connection to like strong anti-immigration groups. And groups that believe in like the purity of the Irish race. I mean, I've seen some of it online, and other routines of mine have gotten me in trouble with the people that believe in the purity of the Irish race brigade. A joke I had made once about, you know, stirring up the gene pool, and you know, one day there'll be like Africans playing GAA and all this. Anyway, that certainly annoyed them back in the day. But I believe that some of those people latched onto the Irish language as a sense of Irish identity, which on one level I can identify with because I think it's great to express your Irish identity through the Irish language. But I don't consider it to be some sense of Irish purity or, it's a race thing, you know, it's like these groups believe in, the race purity or whatever. I don't know. I mean, I think it's not a far throw because Justin Barrett was involved in youth defense, and he clearly is involved in some, he has had involvement with neo-Nazi organizations. So I think it's safe to say that in some of the sort of very militant anti-choice people, there may be some connections with this kind of racist ideology, you know? And but what I never knew that there was a whole crowd of them that had sort of latched onto the Irish language. So at the Oireachtas, I was dancing away at the party, the Cayley. The year before, I had done Jump Around in Irish for the first time. I was having the time of my life. 2008 was a little more hectic because In the Name of the Father had already been on TV, and it was just like pretty intense at the Oireachtas 2008 because everyone had seen it, and yeah, it was just like, it was manic. So I was a little flustered anyway because people were like coming up to me the whole time. And then this guy like gets right in my face, and he was like, "You believe in the murder of Irish children. If you believe in the murder of Irish children, why don't you fuck off back to where you came from?" And I was like, "What?" And he was like, "You did a gig and you said you believed in abortion. That's the murder of Irish children. And you can fuck off back to where you came from. You're not even Irish," you know, this kind of vibe. So I was like already agitated from people like coming up to me the whole night, which, don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining, but I was just like agitated. And I can't remember what I said, but I remember fucking telling this guy to like back off quick because I was gonna like hurt him. You know, I was like, and I had an immediate fight or flight thing, you know? And luckily, somebody I knew from the Irish language world, I won't mention his name, but he just happened to be there and could see that I was getting flustered, and just told your man to fuck off, you know? So I was like, God damn, you know, like I always feel like, you know, because I have a bad temper. So like I always have to watch myself, because as much as you feel, well, in that situation, it was pretty justified. Your man was pretty aggressive, you know? And like I've given the quick version of the story. I mean, like, I think our back and forth went on for a bit, and he was really like up in my face, you know? Not to mention he's telling me to fuck off back to where I came from, which always bugs the fucking shit out of me, you know? So anyway, that dissipated, and I was telling the guy that broke it up what had happened. And, you know, I think it's like isolated incident, you know? And no matter how justified you feel, you don't want to like hit somebody. It's just, it's not worth it, and it's problematic, and it's wrong. So thank God your man was there. And I'm not saying I would have hit him, but it was pretty intense, you know? So I thought that was the end of it. And then I guess about 5 minutes later, they surrounded me. Now, I had already made the assumption that these people were like youth defense, you know? So by the way, I probably should have said that if you don't know who Youth Defense are, they're basically like a serious anti-abortion organization in Ireland. And they're the ones that, well, often they're the ones that are on the streets with like pictures of dead fetuses. And they're the ones that protest outside like family planning clinics. And and Justin Barrett was involved in the early days of the organization. I had already had it in my head, like, oh God, this guy, I think this might be like a youth defense guy, you know? And he had brought up the joke from the gig. And I definitely think it was an amnesty gig, because I think he said you were at an amnesty gig. Let me focus here again. I was just backtracking on what I said there to make sure you guys have enough information. So, I don't know, about 5 minutes later, I get surrounded by like four of them. And I think there were four women, right? And they're all in my face, like shouting a bit like, "You believe in the murder of Irish children. You can fuck off back to where you came from." Like super, super intense, right? So I got out of there fast. Because now it was women for starters. So like now I felt really exposed because I didn't want to like shout back at them. I just felt like, oh, I'm in a really no-win situation here. And they were just shouting, telling me to fuck off back to where I came from. And they were obviously like the one group, and he had gone to say to them like that he had already sort of confronted me. So I went to get a bouncer, and I said, "Listen, there's some people, they seem to be like hell bent on like having a confrontation with me. I said, I want you to see what's going on. So just come with me and we'll see if it happens again. So I brought the bouncer with me. And then when I got close to them, I shouted as loud as possible, fucking youth defense are fucking giving me a hard time. I said youth defense as loud as I could. And one of the girl whose face I can still see in my mind, this woman, who immediately turned around and she says, what the fuck did you say about youth defense? What the fuck did you say about youth defense? And she was like roaring at me. And she started, luckily, she started grabbing my shirt and pulling it. And that was the moment then that the bouncer grabbed her. I mean, I don't know if they were kicked out, but all I know is from then on, it wasn't my problem. And I stepped away and I remember meeting somebody else that I knew from Connemara and I was just telling them about this fucking shit that was going on. And I left. Anyway, that's some of the people you're dealing with when you're dealing with the militant anti-abortion people, just to let you know. They're super intense. I can't stand them. I couldn't stand them before that, just in their reputation. And I couldn't stand them less. Because if you can't talk publicly about the major issues of our country, well, you can just fuck off, you know? So, if you ever wonder why people haven't felt that confident talking about abortion in Ireland, that's part of the reason why, you know. And I'm not a religious guy, you know, and I really do feel that a lot of people's opinions on abortion are religious. So I feel like I believe in, you know, you should be free to be religious, you know, but you should also respect people who aren't, you know. So that's my take on the Eighth Amendment. And that's my story about my encounter with youth defense. And so I hope, my hope for the debate around the Eighth Amendment is that it stays civil, but I don't think it will. I think the emotions run too high. I hope at the end of all this that no matter what, women who've been raped and people who have fetal abnormalities do not have to travel abroad shamed by their own country. I also hope that, you know, women who decide that it's not the right time for them to have a child wouldn't have to travel to another country. But I don't know if that's going to be the case. And actually, I've been away from Ireland, so I haven't been following exactly what the wording of the referendum is going to be. I don't even know if that decision has been made yet. But anyway, it's happening. And that's the beginning of me throwing my opinion out there. By the way, just for the record, on the This Is Ireland, the series I did in the end of 2016, Alison Spittle had done a bit about abortion and we discussed it in an interview afterwards. And there was a complaint put into the BAI about that also, which was not upheld. In fact, it was unanimously rejected. But that is the problem with the debate about, there's just this weird, I think personally, there's a weird abuse of the broadcasting laws. Because I think those broadcasting laws are great. You know, the concept of fairness and equality in terms of how things are put onto, the message that's put across. I like that. And I think that's part of the problem with American media is that, you know, pick your poison and watch it all day. You know, that's part of the problem with Fox News and MSNBC. It's like, what's your politics? Boom, watch your politics all day. I think that's unhealthy. And as much as people like to criticize RTE or criticize Irish media, we actually have a wide range of opinions and decent debates on the radio. But I do think that people abuse the broadcasting laws. They use that fairness law to basically, you know, have a go at media organizations all the time if they feel that their opinion is not expressed enough. So they pulled one of those on me basically. But we, you know, we were a satire show, so it was, it didn't fall under the same remit as, I don't even know the name of the law, but you know, basically the equality and the fairness of a point of view. So it was rejected outright, but they're always there. They're always looking to have a pop, and, hopefully it remains civil. And like, I totally, as you'll see from the next discussion, which is about me meeting this Mennonite woman, like, I completely respect her right to live the way that she lives. And I completely respect people's right to think abortion is wrong, you know, but I just don't think that a religious opinion should be so strong that the laws of the state reflect it, you know? So I'll leave that there. And then I will turn it back over to myself for the second half of the podcast, which is a story about me meeting a Mennonite. And then I'll chat to you guys at the end. That sound is the sound of the coffee maker in my hotel room. If you can hear it, I'm not sure you can, but I'm a few sips into my first coffee here in Hotel Blackfoot in Calgary, Alberta. In Canada, for those that need that. And had a show last night, Thursday night, first time since Montreal 2010 that I performed in Canada. Fun show, a few Irish there. Expecting a lot more Irish at the weekend, but yeah, it's cool. You know, it's always cool to just perform in a different spot. And of course, I like stupidly said like New York, and you know, like when you're in autopilot on a routine, or you know, I have to like, I don't know if anyone knows the routines I do about like the phone, but you know, I always have to like, even in New York, I have to like try to Americanize it. But that routine is just way better as an Irish story, you know, because it's really about Ireland, you know. And but they don't, you know, like When I'm doing the phone routine in New York or last night, like they don't get jokes about like that it was only five numbers, or like when the dad answers the phone and goes, "Hello, 72861," that means nothing to them. So I can't do any of that, you know, which is disappointing. That's a sip. I mean, I cannot stand the sound of people drinking on the radio, but I have begun the podcast before I finish my coffee, so I have to sip. I just had a thought. I shouldn't have taken a sip there. I was feeling something, and now it's gone from my mind. The other two things I want to talk about are the Good Friday ban on booze being lifted in Ireland, and a quick story about how I was sitting next to a Mennonite on the plane on the way over. Let me tell you that quickly, because that was kind of interesting. So I was on the plane to Calgary, and I had seen these two old-fashioned looking women like in the airport. I didn't notice that they were checking in for an Air Canada flight or anything, but I had noticed them. So how can you describe them? It was two girls with like a bonnet, like a little like The Handmaid's Tale. Not as serious as The Handmaid's Tale, but close enough, sort of flowing old-fashioned dresses with a white sort of bonnet on the back. And so I wasn't sure who they were. I thought, one, they could be like some sort of Hasidic Jewish women, but they seemed a bit sort of bright, like not as dark. Their clothing wasn't as dark as normally you would see with like the Hasidic women or the, you know, Orthodox Jews, more conservative Orthodox Jews. I thought they could be Amish, but obviously the Amish, I don't think the Amish fly. And I know that Amish is really just a sect of the Mennonites, but I thought maybe they could be Mennonites, but my awareness of like what a Mennonite actually is was wrong, which we'll discuss in a minute. So when I first saw them, I thought, oh, maybe they're Mennonites. Mennonites are like more modern Amish, is what I thought, right? So then I wasn't, you know, that was it, I guess. That was the three options I thought. I may have thought there was one other, but... and then I kind of thought maybe they were hipsters. You know, maybe they were just like... Maybe that's just like their style, or like a hen night bachelorette party gone wrong, where they were dressing up like Mennonites as part of their hen night. And I don't want to be disrespectful, by the way. I'm just saying these were the thoughts that were going through my mind. Anyway, lo and behold, one of them was sitting next to me, 20 years old. Her name is Crystal. I found that out halfway through. So she was keen to chat, just in case people thought, oh, I just grilled her, you know, because... So she started talking to me straight away. So I was like, holy shit. And she had like an accent, like not of Pennsylvania. I mean, she quickly told me she was from Pennsylvania. So that gave me like a hint that I was probably right on the Mennonite / Amish front. But she had like really strange O's, I can't even do it, but it was definitely an accent. It was American, but it was like not an accent I was familiar with. She also was unbelievably positive in her demeanor. Like the most innocent, cheeriest, happiest thing you've ever met. Which was heartwarming, to be honest with you. But I hadn't established, you know, and I did. I also, on one level, I felt like there was no need to establish like who she was. But at the same time, it was bugging me. And I didn't want to just come out and ask. So we were still in Newark Airport. So I took out my phone and sort of turned it away from her. Because, by the way, at this point, I know that she gets on a plane. I haven't seen her on a phone, but I'm assuming that possibly she does not go on the internet based on like my limited knowledge of Mennonites. So I take out my phone and I sort of keep it away from her and I Google Mennonite and go into images to see if that's like what Mennonites look like, because I'm actually not that familiar with what a Mennonite looks like. And lo and behold, boom, I can clearly see that she's a Mennonite. So then I put on the Wikipedia for Mennonites and I have a quick glance over the history. And you know, it goes back to like immigration from Germany, the Netherlands and Switzerland back in like the 1600s. Was it Menno Simons or Menno Simons, I think. He was like a Martin Luther type character that split from the Catholic Church. He was a priest. Anyway, he is the beginning of the Mennonites. And they began in Europe and then eventually they came over to America. Funnily enough, slightly to do with William Penn. They had like an association with Quakers, and then they came over with the Quakers to Pennsylvania. You know, when we were kids in America, you learned about William Penn. But anyway, he had brought over these Quakers and Mennonites to Pennsylvania, and extreme pacifist, anti-violence. Anyway, I can't go through my quick history of the Mennonites, but through my, you know, a quick look at it. I actually, in my quick glance, I didn't see that they were directly connected to the Amish. So I was like, oh shit, maybe the Mennonites and the Amish are completely different. So but I was very aware that I did not want her to see me Googling. Anyway, she continued to chat to me. So then I had the confidence to ask, are you a Mennonite? And she was like, oh, that's interesting. Most people think we're Amish. And I was like, okay, well, I said, I'm going to admit to you that I just Googled Mennonites to make sure that I was right. And anyway, she was more than happy to talk to me about her life. I mean, I felt a little guilty because then obviously I drilled her with questions because I told her I've never met a Mennonite. And she was like, well, I'm honored. You know, like she was just so bloody nice. Oh, I'm so honored. Oh, it's a pleasure. Oh, yeah, sure. And so then I told her that I looked up Mennonites. And I mean, the conversation was very long. So very quickly I asked her, like, so they drive and she was very quick to distinguish Mennonites from the Amish, that the Mennonites were more affluent, as she said. But she later said that the Amish are sort of slightly modernizing and, you know, making a bit more money, but they still use like a horse and buggies and everything. But she's one of 10. She has seven sisters and two brothers. They live near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And so I was conscious of the fact that I was Googling next to her. So they are very skeptical of the internet, but have begun to use the internet for areas of business. So in other words, because their business, like their family run a greenhouse, but for ordering supplies and stuff like that, they do use the internet. And but she doesn't like surf the web on the regular, although I believe she kind of has a bit. She has a cell phone, but it's just a flip phone. And so she doesn't like surf the web. And she's never been to a movie theater. She doesn't watch movies. She doesn't watch TV. They don't have a TV. So I couldn't talk to her about, like, there's so much stuff that you're shocked, like, she doesn't know about. And she's vaguely aware of what stand-up comedy is. Like, vaguely aware, but not overly familiar. They don't have any performance in the Mennonite tradition. So, like, there's no, like, community play or anything like that. But she does talk about how some members of the community are quite funny and like to tell stories. So when I was trying to explain to her what stand-up comedy was, she was like, oh, so you tell stories. And I was like, yeah, I guess we'll leave it at that. You know, it's like amazing. I'm sorry for these drinking pauses. But as I walk to get a second cup. So anyway, it was interesting because I told her, like, so we're sitting, by the way, we're sitting in front of a screen, this whole conversation. We're sitting in front of the Air Canada entertainment system. So I said, like, you never just, you know, have a look at this thing in front of you when it's sitting in front of you? And she was like, well, no, I mean, that's down to your personal choice. I mean, there's no rule per se, you know, like I believe.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
She wouldn't get in any big trouble if she looked at it. The vibe I was getting was like, it wouldn't be a massive deal if she looked at it, but it's down to your own personal morality. That's what she said. And so she said she just wouldn't, doesn't want to. And every now and then she would make these vague references to the dangers of the modern world. And she kept talking about how the world moves way too fast. And, you know, I didn't make any judgments on her because I know this is her reality. And it's fascinating how people can live an alternative reality within our society, you know? And it does make you question, like, it doesn't make me question, like, is our modern society good or bad? But it does go to show you that what we see as real is just perception of reality. And obviously, within these tight-knit communities where there's different elements of control and laws and what's acceptable and what's not, she would have a completely different view on what is acceptable, you know, what is good for us. You know, she would probably debate the positives of freedom or complete freedom in society. And I was fascinated, you know. She asked me some questions about myself, and I was hesitant because I guess in a way I didn't want to shame her existence, or but it was probably a judgment on my behalf. I should have been more honest. I mean, I was, and I'll talk about that in a sec. But anyway, just to backtrack a little bit. So, she was visiting her boyfriend. So her boyfriend is a teacher near Calgary, in Alberta somewhere, but he's a Mennonite teacher. Which also brings me to the fact that their education system is completely different. She kept saying that to me, like, we learn differently from you guys, from you guys. And she always said that you guys, like, so it was clearly like a difference, you know, like us and them, and that was fine. So their education system is different. So her boyfriend is a Mennonite, but his family only became Mennonites when he was 6 years old. So they are actually brought into the Mennonite community, which is completely allowed. So I could become a Mennonite. I could be baptized as an adult into the Mennonite faith or the Mennonite sect. So she was going to visit him. They've been going out, like, she's 20. So he's 19 going on 20. So they'll probably go out for a year and then get married. So, I mean, I'm assuming that they're just like in a courtship, but it's a difficult long distance relationship. And I asked her, actually, I didn't want to ask too much, but I was like, so she loves her family. Like, she said it like five times, like, I really love my family. And like, it's everything to her, you know? So I thought, how can you, and she had, by the way, taken out a picture of her family to show me. And it was the cutest thing, all in their little dresses and their bonnets, and the men were all dressed in their little black suits, looked like sort of like Protestant ministers, you know, from the early 1900s. And it was so cute, you know, like I was literally melting in the chair. I just thought, oh my God, these people and their life is amazing, you know, and I didn't want to be condescending, but I was literally melting in the chair. I was like, you people are just so cute. You're so cute. God damn, you know? So I was like, how are you going to be away from your family if you marry this guy? And she was like, I know it's very far away. And my dad thinks he's a great guy, but he's worried about you so far. And, I went through such a wide range of emotions for this stranger, you know? And, classic, of course, feeling like I need to look after her. But I'm not gonna lie, there was parts of me that were envious of the simplicity of their lives, you know, that's the truth. So anyway, let me backtrack to the Google incident. So I told her that I Googled Mennonites, and we had taken off at this stage. So I quickly looked at my phone to see if there was like just enough in my maps, like just that would show up without internet, that I could see exactly where Harrisburg, Pennsylvania was, because I couldn't figure it out. And her geography, like everywhere in Pennsylvania, she said it was 3 hours away. So I feel like her geography was off. So I couldn't exactly figure out where Harrisburg was. And it wasn't near Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which I kind of had an idea about because of... you know, because that's where the Amish are, you know? So I went on my phone to see if the maps came up, and it didn't. And then I said, did you know there was 2.1 million Mennonites in the world? And she was like, there is? And I was like, oh, shit. I think from my limited Google search, I might know a lot more about Mennonites than she knows. He said there's 700,000 Mennonites in Africa. And she was like, there is? And I was like, oh shit. So wait a minute. I felt like, oh my God, wait a minute. This, have I said too much? Because I don't want to like whip out Wikipedia right now and fucking blow this girl's mind with basic information on the internet. And by the way, this is not arrogance on my behalf. This is just like, we know that our phones have a wealth of information. And she has not had access to this information, even though she's on a plane in our world. So this is like a fucking weird moment where I go, what is my civic responsibility in terms of, you know, passing on information to this woman, you know? And to a degree, I used to feel that a little bit in China, where I'd be like, hey, you know, I have this VPN and I could show you the reality of Tiananmen Square right now. So anyway, I was like, hey, well, I think the Wikipedia will still be up, you know. Well, and she was like, oh yeah. So anyway, we were going through, and she was actually aware of like loads of her history. You know, she knew about the, obviously the Mennonites, the Amish, and the Hutterites. I didn't know what Hutterites were. And she was aware of like the different schisms to a degree. She was aware of the different schisms that had gone on in the Mennonite religion. And she obviously knew about Menno Simons, and you know, she knew about some other, she knew about Low German and High German, which I didn't know about, which is like different things that they speak in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania German, and all these things that I only know about because I sat next to this woman. Like, I didn't know any of this 24 hours ago. So, but I was also like, oh, fuck, you know, like, will I say too much, or, you know, but she actually, the only thing she really didn't know about was that there were 700,000 Mennonites in Africa, mostly in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Ethiopia, and that there was 2.1 million Mennonites in the world. But she was aware that there was a lot of them in South America, and that some Mennonites she knew had gone there, and also some Mennonites from South America had relocated to various parts of the United States. And she knew that like different Mennonite groups or Amish use shunning or not. She said her group was not big into shunning. But she said she was aware that sometimes people don't eat with us. You know, that they eat on their own. So I guess there is still a bit of shunning going on. But I think she was saying that that's like communities near her, but not her community per se. So it was just a funny, moment where I was worried about, you know, saying too much. So, before I finish my story about Crystal Stauffer, by the way, and then there was some stuff in Wikipedia about Stauffer Mennonites, or there's like a Stauffer group, but that was, she said, oh yeah, my grandfather was one of them. So the Stauffer Mennonites were extremely conservative, very conservative, and used to shun and all that stuff. So she was aware that she came from a line of Stauffer Mennonites, Stauffer, maybe I shouldn't have said her full name, but I think it's okay. And you know, she won't be seeing any cyberbullying that goes on, which to a degree you'd have to agree sometimes that maybe they're better off staying off the internet, you know, because for all the good, there's so much bad. But anyway, which I say a lot when I'm chatting to myself, you know, these, but anyway, so I apologize for those. So she did ask me a few questions about myself. The first question she asked me was, do I believe in Jesus? So I said, I used to, you know, that was my hedge. I said I was raised Catholic. And then I did that classic, I guess, thing that I do where I try to make as much of a connection without sort of without going against my current viewpoint. So I was like, oh yeah, I was a Catholic, and I was real Catholic. I was an altar boy, and my accent changed. Suddenly I'm a Mennonite. But I was like, oh yeah, I was very Catholic. I was an altar boy, and then I was a reader at Mass, and you know, we went to Mass every Sunday. And and then she was like, what happened? And I said, the joke, I actually did a quick joke on stage last night, and I was like, well, I got educated, which got a laugh. But I actually, you know, that's always the battle with the stand-up comedian. It's like, do you sacrifice an element of respect for another human being's belief, which I have, but at the same time, are you disrespecting your own belief to not make that joke? So the joke is that for me, the journey to not believing in God came from a journey of education. But at this, so I'll make that joke and I'll get a laugh. But at the same time, I'm always aware that there's an element of disrespect for somebody else's belief in that. But that's the trade-off. And, you know, I you can't disrespect your own belief. If you spent your whole time worrying about disrespecting somebody else's beliefs, you know, so will you sacrifice your own? Because you don't want to disrespect somebody else. I just think that's an element of free speech that I respect too much to to worry about. So I wasn't disrespecting her beliefs per se. I was just representing my own on stage last night, and it got a laugh. But there was an element. I immediately backtracked at the gig, you know, because, you know, I liked the laugh that came, but I also am aware that some people might have not liked it, and I respect their right not to like it. So anyway, and all that going through your head while trying to make people laugh, that is the challenge of stand-up comedy. So she asked if I believed in Jesus, and, you know, if it was like a born-again Christian, you know, trying to convert me, I would have, like, debated them, you know? But with her, I thought, well, I don't want to, like, you know, I can't imagine that she's been in a lot of debate. Like, she's in a very safe environment for her belief system. And I am not going to put anything out there that, you know, would ping in her brain, you know? But also, she's from such a safe environment. I don't think it would matter anyway. But at the same time, like, I respected her unique situation way too much to get into a debate about. I didn't want to. Selfishly, really, because I was too curious about her life, you know? And there's a lot more of me in the world than there are of her. So I thought, she probably knows a lot more about my world than I know about hers. So let me deflect. So I told her I was very Catholic when I was a kid, but I'm not anymore. And, I think I said something like, oh, you know, just life happens and these things. But I did, of course, I said, but I just try to be a good person every day, which is true. That is my belief system. I don't believe you need like a religious moral code to be a good person. And I think that our morality evolves. And she then asked me, was I married? I was like, oh, bollocks. I'm literally the least Mennonite person on the fucking planet here. Fucking Ten and her family, Crystal with her parents, and that don't believe, you know, we don't believe in divorce. Are you married? I was like, no, I'm not married. She's like, really? Like baffled by this. So I was like, oh, I was nearly married. You know, I was engaged, and we broke up in 2008. Thank God she didn't get into like what happened, you know. But I deflected on that one too. And I'm not gonna lie. I told her I had a girlfriend. I mean, it's kind of a lie, you know? I just wanted to get her off the scent. She kind of accepted that, and we moved on. So, I mean, that's it really. I really wanted to just like ask if she would talk to me on the podcast, but I thought that would be way too disrespectful. And I'm pretty sure she wouldn't be allowed to engage in modern media if she's not allowed to listen to it or watch it, that she wouldn't be allowed to, engage with it. So I didn't ask. I thought it'd be too disrespectful anyway. Yeah, bloody downright rude. But she was so interesting, and she was so nice. And her sister, by the way, was further back in the plane. And so I went for a pee. And it's just so interesting because they have their own way of engaging with technology. So when I was walking back, I saw her sister was on iPad, right? And I just could see, because I was walking back, you know, so I could see her iPad, and she was like just looking at pictures of Mennonites. You know, like she wasn't on Facebook. I investigated when I got back to Crystal and said, oh, I see your sister was looking at pictures on iPad. She was like, oh, she's writing a letter, putting together pictures from her wedding. So there was like this, I could see then that she had been writing like this long script about the wedding experience, and then pictures of the wedding were there. But as I passed, like, it was just like an iPad with pictures of Mennonites, you know? And it was just, I don't know. There was such a cuteness to it, because they're evolving at their own pace and in their own world. They're just like, they're looking at each other in their little flowing gowns and in their little bonnets. And so I was delighted to be to have a little glimpse into the a unique world of the Mennonites. And she talked about, Crystal talked about her dress sense. And she said that we don't have to do it. We just choose to do it for modesty. You know, after watching A Handmaid's Tale, the word modesty and all these things are bandied about. So I did actually ask her. I said, you wouldn't be aware of The Handmaid's Tale, would you? Which was probably a dumb question because, of course, she's not aware of the fucking Handmaid's Tale. And thank God. I actually said, you know, if you're ever near it, like, don't watch it. Because I literally think her world would fucking fall apart. But I did say that I feel like there's elements of A Handmaid's Tale dress sense that perhaps they borrowed from the Amish. So that was that story, which was fucking a lot longer than I was expecting. Fuck! God damn it! This is going to be a long, bloody podcast. I mean, I think it's interesting. So very quickly, the ban on Good Friday drinking was lifted. So, yippee on one level. For any Americans that are listening, in Ireland, there's 2 days of the year that you can't, the pubs won't open, licensed premises won't open, including off-license. It's Christmas Day and Good Friday. Nobody seems to have a problem with the Christmas Day pub closings because I guess it's such a family day and that's part of the tradition and people are happy with that part of the tradition. People not as happy with the Good Friday ban because it seems pointless. And so it's gone. You can now drink in pubs on Good Friday. Now, for those that aren't aware, because you couldn't drink on Good Friday, people drank more than you could possibly imagine on Good Friday just because you couldn't. So people would pour into the off licenses of Ireland on Holy Thursday, the day of the Last Supper. So while Jesus was washing the feet of the apostles, Irish were pouring into off licenses to stock up, lest there should be 24 hours where they didn't have access to booze. And while it's comical and reinforces stereotypes, it was always such an odd ban, I felt. Because it was wrapped up in religion and, you know, this sense of fasting and mourning for the death of Jesus. And, you know, as you can see from my story about Mennonites, I have a lot of respect for other people's faiths. But what I don't have a lot of respect for is when there's too much connection between church and state. So I've never liked the ban on Good Friday drinking. Despite the fact that I haven't drank since 1995, I never liked the ban on Good Friday drinking. Never understood it. It was always a pain in the ass in terms of comedy and shows. And well, actually, it was great in that theaters have an exemption from the ban. So if there's a show, the bar could open. So sneaky trick. I actually had many Good Friday shows throughout the years because they would sell faster than other shows because people knew that they could see the show and drink. The shows were never great because everyone was always fucking annihilated drunk. But they were great for selling tickets. Theaters had exemptions, but boats, you know, like ferries to Wales. Sometimes people get a ferry to Wales and back just to get drink on Good Friday. And I think trains were allowed to sell drinks. So there was always like the Good Friday trains. Anyway, it's gone now. And while I'm happy, there is a little part of me, and I believe that some people were debating about this, that it's sort of part of tradition and kind of like an Irish identity. There's a part of me that's kind of sad that it's gone because it is just a unique thing that Ireland had. And while it was always sad to watch all these zombified tourists walking around going like, what is going on? I'm here for the weekend. There's a bank holiday weekend. And now all of a sudden I can't get into the bar for the happy drinks and the Irish music and Irish stew. I just want the Irish stew and a pint of Guinness. While I felt bad for them, I will long for even just the giving out about it. You know, just that part of Easter, which was, oh shit, the pubs are closing. So it's gone now, and I'm happy because it's that one more chip away at the ridiculous presence that the Catholic Church had in Irish law and then Irish education Which is slowly chipping away. And again, like I say, I respect people's faiths. And I went to Catholic school myself in America, but, you know, it wasn't public school, you know, and our public schools were, you know, the kids that went to public school had separate religious education that they did in their own time. But my parents had the right to send us to a Catholic school, which they paid for. And while I think that actually people who want a Catholic education should still have the right to get state, you know, that still have the right to get a public education that is Catholic, I just feel that there should be way more options available in Ireland. And the debate rages on, but I don't buy for a second that that there's enough choice. And I don't buy for a second that the fact that since the dawn of the Irish Free State, that there wasn't way too much interaction between the Catholic Church and the government in developing the infrastructure of the state. You know, so the much of Irish infrastructure, particularly around education, and obviously years ago in terms of child welfare, was way too wrapped up in the Catholic Church. And the Irish state allowed the church to take on too much of it. Also health. I'm glad that balance is slowly changing. And again, I respect everyone's right to their beliefs. But at the same time, you know, I just feel it'd be better to have more choice. So I guess we can celebrate the Good Friday ban disappearing while at the same time not being afraid to long for the nostalgia of a different time. And I am nostalgic to a degree for the Good Friday drinking ban. I mean, it hasn't affected me in a long time because I don't drink, but I did always, I did kind of enjoy the there was something I liked about it. I think it's quite ridiculous that the Good Friday pub crawls are being organized. It's like, listen, man, the people are drinking every day in Ireland and they're drinking loads. So there's no need to make it seem like it's a special day. You know, let's just be mature about it and just get on and be like, great, you know, we can go to the pub on a day off, you know, because it's a day off and it's nice to have the freedom to do whatever the fuck you want within reason. So happy days. No more stocking up. No more crises on a Thursday night. No more 24-hour famine of booze. The drought is over. Long may it last. And for the final section of the podcast, which I guess is a bit more serious. That's not serious. You know, we're just having the crack. I talk, as I said, about do I have an anxiety disorder? It's literally me just fucking hammering away to myself on times where I think maybe that is what that is. But I've never been to a doctor about it. And I guess it's just literally just like, I'm a little bit from the put it out there and see how it affects people. So it's literally just me having a little muse about whether, you know, the times that I get incredibly stressed, if that's normal or not. I shouldn't have put down, do I have an anxiety disorder? I should have put down, am I normal? That should have been the question. Am I normal? Because here's the thing. In the early years of me not drinking, I really did a lot of work on myself. Like I talk about this in a minute, but just to verify something, I did like a lot of stuff, a lot of therapy, a lot of all that stuff, and I was so confident, not just about what made me tick, but I literally thought that I knew everything about the human condition. An arrogance, I would say, almost, you know, I guess the zeal of the newly converted, you know, the sense of, oh, I get it. I'm an enlightened being, you know. And the thing that sucks about getting older is you realize, you know, the older you get and the more you know, the less you know. So nowadays, I think I know nothing, you know. I miss the confidence that I used to have about what I know. I'm glad that I have the wisdom to know that I know less, but I do miss that confidence. I mean, it's actually, you know what? It's easier to write material. It's easier to be, to write a show when you fucking think you know, when everything is black and white, you know? And, the fucking nuance sucks. Nuance is a pain in my ass. So, Now that I know that I know so much less, I prefer to be more honest and put out the questions, you know? So now I'm literally putting out the unconfident questions about myself of what am I, who am I, and how can I grow in my 40s by talking to anonymous people on a podcast about my shit. But I think it's healthy, you know? Like, I think it's funny. I'd rather this podcast be an eclectic mix of things, whether it be fucking Matteo talking about Liza Minnelli or, you know, Ashling B talking about, you know, how women live in fear, or, you know, Godfrey talking about the racist equation, you know, like the various things that we've had on the podcast, or John Bishop talking about his working class roots, you know, like I'd rather it be a real eclectic mix of topics. So if it's my time to talk on my own, you know, I'm not just going to rant about Trump, you know, which I have a quick Trump rant if I could digress. Trump is really boasting about the effects of the corporate tax cut. And while that's great and all, Obama wanted a corporate tax cut back in 2013. It was turned down by the Republicans, turned down. So we could have had all the benefit. You know, we could have had, it wasn't as much. It was 28%. It wasn't as much as Trump did. But it would have been, no, sorry, it was 25% and lower. For no, 28%, and I think 25% for manufacturing. So we could have had some of these benefits back at a time where it was way more needed, right? We're seeing huge benefits now from this corporate tax cut. We'll see long term, but you know, at the moment you're seeing this little bump. But it was way more needed back in 2000. That was a time where the economy needed more of an injection than it does now, right? And this prick is going on talking about how great it is, and the Republican talking about how great it is when they blocked it at a way more important time. So while it's great that they think that they're like the saviors, they actually stopped progress for such a long period of time. So it's just sick, you know. I've just so had it up to my eyeballs with politics because it's so not about what's good for society and all what's about what's good for these fucking parties, you know. So it's so fucking stupid. It's so ridiculous, actually. Politics in general, not just Trump. My frustration with Trump is always there, but my frustration with politics grows, you know, even louder in my head, because it's just so ridiculous, like us and them, Republicans, Democrats, who gives a fuck? So thanks everybody for listening. I hope these kind of podcasts are okay, sort of like semi-storytelling. I will be back to some interviews when I get back to New York, and it's not 100% sure, but I think I'm going to be back in Ireland for a week in March. So I'll try to stock up in a couple while I'm there. Anyway, my next shows in New York are in Long Island. Friday, the last Friday of February, I'm in Belmore in the Governor's Brokerage. And the Saturday, I'm in McGuire's in Bohemia in Suffolk County. And then I'm in Boston the following week, March 1st, 2nd, 3rd. And then I'm in Caroline's, New York for Paddy's weekend, 15th, 16th, and 17th. And it is in that gap between those shows that I'm hoping to get back to Ireland. And that is hopefully to get back and do a bit of promo for the special coming out on RT Player. Anyway, I've been skiing all day, so I am absolutely exhausted. And I know that doesn't help you guys to like me. I'm sure you're all thinking, what a prick. What an absolute asshole that he would gloat about his skiing. But it is an addiction of mine. I'm addicted to the powder, which, taken out of context, could could be a headline. Des Bishop admits he's addicted to the powder. But, I can see that people seem to like the just me chatting. I don't know if they'd be happy if it was all the time, but for now, it's working. It helps to keep them regular. Not sure which is more important, good podcast or regular podcast, but regularity seems to be pretty important. So I hope this one was okay. And, yeah, you know the usual. Instagram me, Facebook me, Snapchat me. Des Buffer is my Snapchat. And, you know, it's so embarrassing. I actually started looking at my phone. So I better just get off. So thanks, guys. And I'll chat to you soon. By the way, I keep forgetting to say this, but it's Melty Brains. New Dawn is the song that plays at the beginning of this podcast. And they allowed me to use it, and I haven't given them enough props. Awesome Irish band. Melty Brains with a question mark. Thanks.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.